All right, welcome to Return on Podcast, where we talk about the experiences, obsessions, and habits of the most successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Tyler Jeffcoat, and I want to welcome you to today's show. Guys, you've been patient with us. We kind of closed these interviews in season one about 6 months ago, and now we are back on the horse. We're going to continue to do some of these shorter form mini series, like the Cash is King series we did, and like the Book Report Summer School series that I did. But what we want to do now is we want to pivot back to these. What are the habits? What are the hacks? What are the best practices? What's the leading edge of thought leadership and e-commerce when it comes to running our Amazon business or Shopify business, eBay, Etsy, Wayfair, any other e-commerce channel, right? And so just as a reminder, this podcast, as all of them, is brought to you by my company, Seller Accountant. So we do bookkeeping, we do fractional CFO. We only do those two things for e-commerce brands. If you're overwhelmed by your accounting or by the numbers of your business, please give us a call. We'd love to help you get a hold on the numbers so that you can make more money and improve your cash flow. Today, on today's episode, I can't wait to dive into this discussion with one of my best friends, Will Christensen. The guy's a monster in the space, is one of the key leaders in one of the most important software companies in the Amazon space. He also owns a company that does automations and integrations. You're going to love that discussion. But before we dive into that, I want to take just 1 second to give you a quick current event. So in case you guys hadn't noticed this, I want you to go into Seller Central and take a close look at the Small and Light FBA Small and Light program. Let me just read you the quick note that I see in Seller Central today. Note: on August 29th, 2023, the FBA Small and Light program will end and low price FBA rates will be introduced. Any low price FBA rate eligible items will automatically receive the low price FBA rates. Enrollment of new products into the FBA Small and Light will end after July 17th of 2023. For more information, look at Amazon. So what this means for you, why do you care? You need to take a really close look at your smaller products, the ones that you engineered under $12 retail so that you could save on that FBA pick and pack fee. You're about to get squeezed, and the advice that I'm going to give you is extremely simple. You're going to have to start testing increasing your price point. If you ratcheted it back to $10, back when it was a $10 limit, you're not going to get those benefits anymore. If you were happy because you were able to cram it into a $12 or $11.99 kind of product, you're now going to be exploring more of a $13.99 kind of price range to make up the difference. Now, of course, the level of FBA fee is going to depend on the weight of the product you are shipping. But you've got a couple of weeks right now before the product disappears in late August. And I just want to encourage you to start A/B testing your price increases now. Do not wait until this program completely vanishes going into the month of September. All of a sudden you get that P&L back from your accounting team, like Seller Accountant, for September, and you're like, whoa, why did I lose 5 points in profitability? This could be the case if you're selling two-pack supplements or you're selling small and light products that you're dependent on. So that's kind of a PSA there. And now let's dive in to today's discussion. It's time to maximize profitability and cash flow. It's time to learn habits and hacks from the best e-com CEOs. It's time for Return on Podcast with me, Tyler Jeffcoat. All right, welcome to Return on Podcast. Today, I am so excited to talk to, honestly, one of my best friends, Will Christensen. Listen, if you're in e-commerce and you say you have like a personal relationship with one of your homies, somebody that you're talking to, especially someone who lives across the country from you, I bet I have a closer relationship. And the reason is that Will and I actually were like in the same incubator 5 years ago in cubicles right next to each other, like, you know, using a cell phone and a prayer to try to scratch out a living. And now we are, you know, both executives in a couple of successful companies. Will, welcome, buddy. How are you doing today?
Hey, I couldn't feel more similarly to you. I mean, as you talk about like a close relationship and a best friend, like, I totally think of you that way. And when we check in, it's like, oh, sweet, I get to talk to Tyler today. And, but you know, we reminisce on the craziness that was, you know, the incubator. And literally, like, you talk about Tyler and like this idea of like the cubicle. I could see his desk from my desk, like across the way. And the dude is literally all by himself with a whiteboard, and he's writing on the whiteboard like, this is my wildly audacious goal. Like this is what I'm going to build, like what he has built today. And so like I got to see that on the whiteboard, and slowly the numbers went up. And you know he's what? How big is the team now?
We're about 20 people here at Seller Count. Say,
I just it's funny because I feel like a godfather or something. Like I you know like I watched that thing grow and even gave some good advice at some
Oh
point.
yeah. Oh
So
yeah.
awesome. So awesome to watch it grow.
Well, buddy, I appreciate you joining me. This is a very fitting kind of first interview of season two of Return on Podcast. So for those of my listeners who listened last year, we did a ton of these interviews. We took a bit of a hiatus in the winter to do some mini series. You guys will continue to get that content, but I really wanted to pivot back to this. Let's talk to people who are killing it in the space that are on the cutting edge of thought leadership. And of course, Will, I thought about you. Will, I mean, you're on a couple of executive teams. One is the venerable disruptive software called Seller Labs. Another one is your company that you founded, Data Automation. Would you mind giving us the 2-minute Will story? How in the world did you get into, JOB to owning your own business?
So, I mean, honestly, for me, I've always been super passionate about creating something from nothing. Like, I probably need to go back through my kid like drawings and stuff because my dad still tells me the story of this thing where I made this really awesome diagram of a garbage truck that would reach back behind your house and suck the garbage out of the garbage can so that you didn't have to walk it. 'Cause that was my job, right? My job was to take that garbage can to the curb. And so I made this beautiful diagram of like, then all the garbage is gone and you don't have to take it out. And my dad was like, man, you have an imagination. And so that idea of like, I want to make value and I want to make it so that people don't have to do the yucky, boring things has just been in my blood from the beginning. And so I started at an agency. They gave me a lot of yucky, boring stuff, which was basically, and honestly, I have to go back and thank them for that. Like, thank you for giving me 16 hours of manual copy and paste each week, because that was the rock that I had to lift to the top of the mountain to create the automation muscles, the coding muscles, and all of this stuff to like completely automate that process. It took me like 360 hours or something like that to teach myself all of it. And so I became an Excel wizard, a Google Sheets wizard. I taught myself Visual Basic so I could do the basics of coding. And I was like, wow, this is cool. What if I helped other people with this? Good friend of mine called me and said, hey, Will, come out to Georgia. And I was like, I'm not going to Georgia. All my family lives here in Utah. And he's like, no, come out to Georgia. Check this out. So my wife and I went out there and he said, my brother, Brandon Checkitz, he's the founder of Seller Labs. He has helped several people start their own businesses. And I bet he would take a risk on you if you came out here. And I was like, what? Really? And he was like, no, really. And so I prayed about it and we felt good about it. And we moved our family out to Georgia for 4 years. And after being with Brandon for 6 months, I had done some crazy stuff. You want to hear a crazy story? Ask me about how I got kicked off of UGA's campus and told never to come back because I was selling books in front of the bookstore. Just all sorts of really crazy stuff. Brandon
Love it.
decided, you know what? I'm going to take a risk on this guy. And that's what got me into data automation.
I think that's, I mean, the part of that is funny. You laugh about the, stretching the rules a little bit, but I mean, we probably do need more kids to like take risk and break things and not always. I was reading a really good book the other day by Eric Ries, the guy that wrote the Lean Startup. He wrote a follow-up book called The Leader's Guide, and he's interviewing somebody about how like corporations are engineered to kill any dissent, right? Like you like intentionally crush anything that might kill the golden goose. But the problem is you also accidentally crush all of your innovation when you do that. And so the reason that entrepreneurship, disruptive entrepreneurship, like what you've done, will always be a thing, is that you're always going to need people that are willing to kind of go break things and figure out what needs to happen to be successful. So I do respect you, man. You've been in the game, as long as I have now. I mean, I was pivoting from one company. You were launching your venture there. So, I mean, let's bring this into our our core audience here is going to be kind of a seven-figure Amazon or e-commerce brand. And I just, this is an, I don't even know if you have an answer to this question, but like, what are you seeing changing about what it takes to be successful as an e-commerce brand these days?
Man, one thing I would say to you is if you have not tried, like if you've not gone to openai.com or .org, I don't even know what it is because I just Google it, right? That's what we do. But if you have not gone there and created a free account to mess around with 3.5, ChatGPT, and then if you haven't gone to and messed around with 4, you literally are losing traction right now. Like you will get eaten alive. I see the geek out alert there. That's amazing. Yeah. Yes. 100%. If you are not playing with that and testing its limits to understand how AI will affect your business, you will be left behind. Period. End of story. Because, like, and we'll get into some more of the hacks and different things that are out there for automation and looking at that. But like, dude, I took the thing on a date with me. Like I literally opened the sucker up and I'm on a date with my wife and she says, we're going to go on a date by rolling the dice. And I was like, okay, what's that look like? She's like, well, I got all these gift cards. So you pick a number between one and whatever. So we pick out the gift card, we go to the restaurant and afterwards she's like, now what are we going to do? And I was like, I don't know. Let's ask ChatGPT. So I was like, date ideas in Syracuse, Utah. And I gave it kind of some parameters around where we are, came up with some really fun date ideas, suggested a nature walk. And on the way to the nature walk, I was like, give me ideas of things I could do while I'm at the nature walk to make it interesting. And give me 10 ideas or give me 6 ideas. And then we rolled the dice again and it came up and it was a photo scavenger hunt. And I was like, okay, give me 10 ideas of things. Create a scavenger hunt of 10 ideas. It made the freaking scavenger hunt. And it knew where I was going because there were blog posts or something out there that had described that park. Like, and then I said, I've got the photo of the duck. Cross it off the list and tell me what's left. And it crossed it off the list. And so the dang AI told me which pictures were left. And at the end it said, just remember that dates are about enjoying your time with those you're with. And I hope you enjoyed that scavenger hunt. Like, it was like, this is so freaking cool. Yeah. Like there was no database. I walked away. I was like, I could make an app. All we do is just generate date ideas with ChatGPT. Like it would be like a front end that was just talking to ChatGPT with some prompts.
So let's stick with ChatGPT for a second, because I think this has been really interesting. I'm like you, geeked out quite a bit on ChatGPT just to kind of, and by the way, I love that use case of like, okay, make me, you know, I'm a data guy. I'm an accountant. You're like, neither of us are going to have the best date ideas, like make us better, make us better as husbands and it'll do it. Right. But here's my question is, and this is where it gets overwhelming for me. When you try to pivot it into using ChatGPT to make money for an e-commerce business. Mm-hmm. I've heard a couple of nuggets about this, but I want to kind of hear where your thought is. Where is your head on this right now? How do you use this in you and your clients' businesses to be better?
So the thing that I've seen, and I've seen it across multiple places, but the reason I say if you're not personally using it, you're falling behind, mm-hmm. is because I'm not inside the head of your business of every day for what's going on there. So literally every task, as I've ingrained it into my, I pay the $20 a month to get access to ChatGPT-4 because it is that much better than one. And everything I do, I play across that. So if I'm trying to come up with titles for a product, if I'm trying to come up with product ideas, if you're like, I ran into a guy who he's using it to generate product, pictures of products. And then he's testing those using something like a PicFu. By the way, Seller Labs has a PicFu, like product, testing against an audience and getting back an understanding. So you can do this literally inside Seller Labs right now, but you put up the picture that you generated with AI that would have cost a couple $100 to give to a designer somewhere. And then you put up the top competitor and say, which Amazon product would you have bought? And then like for like almost nothing, just your brain power, you've got an idea of which products are going to beat out some of those competitors and pick out and look at. So it's like the iterative process of product creation, of product research, of, I mean, anything you can think of. Like if you want to get into a niche and let like, oh, I'm really, 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 really good at this cooking thing, but I kind of want to get into like another side of it. I'm good on the cooking end, but what about the cleaning side? If my audience is buying on the cooking side, what about the cleaning side? I don't know a lot about that. You could literally word vomit into ChatGPT, like click the button on your thing and like voice type and just spill your thoughts into it and say, and at the end put the question, what products should I be developing in the cleaning space since I'm so good at the cleaning space at the cooking side, and this is why I'm so good at these sides. It will spit out ideas, and its ideas are based upon like tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of data that it's consumed out there. Like I wrote a job post yesterday, and I literally wrote it while I was driving. I'm driving down the road, and I just hit the voice to text button, and I just word vomited into it as if I was talking to Tyler on the phone about what I wanted this person to do for me, and like why I thought it would be awesome, and why I thought the opportunity was amazing. And at the end, I said, "Write me a job post based on everything I just said." Boop, and the job post came out literally better than I could have written it.
Wow. I mean, it's a feature of ChatGPT that you're using that I'm not is like the app and the voice dictation. I haven't been doing that. That's a really good idea. I want to give you guys, for those of you who are watching this or listening to this, I want to give you a quick homework assignment. A really good friend of mine launched a website called artfullycool.com, artfullycool.com. And I think you're going to get a real glimpse at what Will's talking about, where he uses Midjourney and an integration to create custom art, automatically create custom listings with custom bullet points. It'll put the art in someone's bedroom so you can see what it would look like on the wall. And then the Shopify site is automatically integrated with Printify and with other automations and payment gateways. So theoretically, and now it's funny, he's still trying to solve for driving some of the initial traffic, but like theoretically, someone can discover this, purchase a really high-end piece of art. And it having been completely automated, except for a prompt, like you just talked about, Will, where it's
It's
like,
original.
that's right, completely
A
original.
completely original piece of art that was literally like they made it by typing and they get to see it in the room. That is so cool.
Isn't
That
that
is so
cool?
cool.
So, okay, anything else related to ChatGPT before we talk about other automations?
So I guess all I'm saying is if you're not using it in your everyday life right now, and obviously you have to be a little careful about what you put into it from the standpoint of like they're using this data to train it and look at it, but that like the job posting that I was talking about, I don't please put that out there. Like tell people I want somebody in this job posting, right? So what I would say is if you're not using it in your everyday life right now, and you're not considering it, and by the way, the whole like thing, all I did was make a shortcut on the bottom of my browser that opens up the ChatGPT 4 prompt. And then I click in the text box, it opens up my text board, and then I hit the voice to text button. So there's no extra feature of an app or anything like that. It's literally just my browser on my phone that's doing it. And then I can send that entire prompt, like the discussion I had with the AI, to my assistant or to whoever else is there. Like if you're kind like last thing I'll say, if you're using Loom, and you're not taking the transcript of what you did in Loom, or like the transcript. I don't know if you're doing this yet, Tyler, but this podcast should be handed to something that can transcribe it, then handed to ChatGPT that says, hey, make a blog post out of this. And it's amazing how good the blog post will be off of our random back and forth.
Like that. Listen, guys, here, even on ROP, we're getting better here today. Will's teaching us. I love it, buddy. So, okay, listen. So you and I speak at a lot of the national conferences for Amazon sellers, and I'm like number finance nerd guy. You're automation nerd guy. You're that guy. You've got to be that guy. Everyone's a guy.
Automation nerd guy. Yep.
You're automation nerd guy. And so I want to ask you a question. Like if I'm, let's say I'm a $1 to $2 million e-commerce brand owner and starting to feel a bit overwhelmed with my ops. And I am hearing you. I'm picking up what you're putting down. I want to automate something in my business. Well, where would you start?
If you haven't automated anything yet, the place that I would start is with your customer service. And the place I would start actually sounds a little less so said every Amazon seller ever, oh yeah, I created customer service at mybrand.com. Yeah, I handle customer service. That thing is a literal minefield. Like you just created a way for anybody to contact you and for anybody to contact you. And if you miss anything, that's a one-star review. Like you literally just created a minefield for yourself by creating. So you're probably saying, well, okay, well, great. It is a minefield. What do I do with it to make it not a minefield? You go put an automation on that with an auto reply that says, thank you so much for reaching out to our brand. We love you and we're excited that you're here. The fastest way to get in touch with us is actually by filling out this form that's going to ask you a key set of questions that are going to get all of our questions answered. So you can choose. If we go back and forth via this email right here and you just reply to the email, it's going to take us 5 emails going back and forth. Or you can fill out this form and we'll ask all of our questions in one email. And you'll just have everything you need. So please click on this link. So if you're scared if people won't, they want to reply to the email, then give them the option. Otherwise, tell them the way you contact us, and it's just an auto reply that replies the same thing. The way you contact us is through this contact us form. If you push people through a form and you learn how people are asking questions of you and getting that, you can often solve their problems before they ever get to a human being. Like you can completely automate the 10 basic questions people are asking. The reason you see all these support requests and like you go in and it says, what's your problem with? Oh, my problem's with pens. And you sell pens and pencils and all that. Oh, my problem's with pens. And it's specifically with the black pens.
Right.
Well, that frequently asked question can literally pop up on the screen. If you like using something like Intercom or some of these other platforms, like that's where I would start. Customer service. And your reviews will get better as you've completely automated that section of it and really put some good boundaries about how the information's coming in.
Well, what I love about that is I was reading a book recently. I think it's called $100 Million Deals, or Offers or something like that. That's pretty good. Alex something or another. But like he talks about the elements that detract from the perceived value of your customer. So there are things that build value that make your customer happier, that make them willing to pay more, that make them more likely to come back. And then there are elements that detract from the value. And the two most important detractors are perceived energy needed. Am I making it hard for my customers to submit a customer request or to get relief? And then the second one, so energy is one detractor, and then time is the second detractor. So what you just described is an automation that eliminates both of those pain points simultaneously, where I feel bad. I have a place to go to or with an auto form that tells me that discovers exactly what I need as a solution with as little effort as possible so that I can delete this from my RAM. And to your point, the likelihood that I'm going to go back to Amazon and leave a one-star review when I get that kind of experience is pretty low. So I think that's good advice.
Yeah, well, the other thing is that it's backwards compatible, right? You've already put that little card inside all your packages that says contact us for customer service. Well, the next time you print that card, it shouldn't say contact for customer service. It should say go to mybrand.com/ we'll help you or /help, and it has the form immediately. Like don't even send them to the email. Don't create the extra step. But if you make the autoresponder that pushes them towards that, and it's an immediate response right off the bat, and if you do the automation right, you can actually take what they sent in the original one and make it pre-populate in the form. So they're not having to copy and paste from their original email and make it all go. You can actually like push the whole process through. And that's all possible with something as simple as something like Zapier. Like
Okay, I was
you
going to
can.
ask you, is there a set of tools? I figured Zapier might be part of the playbook, but like,
Yeah.
yeah.
So if I were to do this, the way I would set it up is I would set up the autoresponder in probably Gmail, and just do a basic autoresponder. And then the form that I would use, I'd probably use something like Airtable has a pretty good form system in it and you can pre-fill it. Even Google Forms has the ability to pre-fill some of that stuff. And then I would just pre-fill that so that when they click on that link, it's got all of that juice that they put in that original discussion and pushes it through. And if you diagram this out and throw it on Upwork. You can find somebody that's not going to be too expensive. There's a lot of Zapier certified experts. Data Automation does a little bit of that as well. So there's a lot of people who can help you kind of build this process.
Love it. Yeah. So in other words, this sounds like, think about this. If you're a $1 million seller, customer service is a pain point for you because now you're the CEO juggling too many plates. I feel like Will just articulated a solution that for, you know, maybe a few hundred bucks to a few thousand dollars to set up and maybe a, what are we talking, $100 a month or
maybe, $100 a month. If $100 a month, if you've got a lot of customer service inquiries that are coming through.
So the point being is, guys, like, take action on that. Like, I'm, you know, like, if you can't figure it out, contact Will and his team at Data Automation, they'll help you. But like, it sounds to me, and I'm an accountant, right? But it sounds to me that like, there's no better return on investment than Will could give you right now than to go solve that problem, check it off as done. And then, you know, what are you going to pay a couple $100 a month to have it done? I mean, geez.
The place I would go first, honestly, like Zendesk and Intercom are two automation platforms that are built around this sort of thing. And you don't even need a Zapier in the middle, right? Like it'll automatically do a lot of this stuff for you when it gets in there and like, you know, $100 to $200 a month and it's solved. So you kind of have to do some research to decide what's the right solution for you. If you're on a shoestring budget and you want to do it for $20 a month, honestly, sometimes those platforms, like I was telling you, if you're willing to learn, go to Zapier University and look at their course. It's a free course that'll tell you all about how the innards of that thing works and get you an idea of what's there. So if you've got time on your hands to dig into that kind of stuff, or you've got a team member who has time on their hands, who's, you know, somewhat technical, go for it. Like it's right at your fingertips.
All right. So dude, I want to make sure before we run out of time that we talk about this thing I keep hearing about. So I lead a couple of masterminds where one of the hot topics here recently has been this new Seller Labs product data hub. And, you know, I'm a CFO, so I'm desperate for someone to solve some of these problems that are out there. Mm-hmm. Listen, I know you're closer to it than I am. Can you give me some insights into how Data Hub, you guys think it might change the way Amazon sellers operate?
Yeah. So what we're finding is that the hardest part about Amazon is getting all of the data you want in the right place you want it and visualizing it so you can make those actionable insights. Mm-hmm. And so we've met a lot of sellers that are currently doing that manually. They've hired almost a whole team of VAs that go download those reports, put them into Sheets or Excel, or maybe they put them into the back end of Tableau or some other BI tool to get there. And that's how they're analyzing or visualizing what's there. What we've done is completely automated the process of bringing all of those reports into a SQL database and then serve that up for you for $60 a month per merchant account. So it's, I mean, ridiculously low rate. We've actually got agency level pricing because we're trying to help people like Tyler as well from the standpoint of like how to pick apart all of this. So the price per merchant goes down dramatically based on a bulk buy. And it really is about creating a seamless experience for you and for your agencies that you've hired to connect with that. So if you're not the one who's doing this and your agency is doing it, connect us with your agency, because we've built tools that are literally tailored for them to make this process seamless and easy. So the idea is, oh, well, and here's just an example. Amazon's real, real good at confusing data. So if you look at the United States version of the word canceled and the UK version of the word canceled, there's an extra L between the two. Like you, and so if you're trying to like, okay, I want to check out all of my canceled orders for the entire world, you just missed out on the UK if you just selected the UK. Well, at Seller Labs, we fix that for you before it gets into the database. So all of these minor gotchas that the different pizza teams are putting in different inches, period, versus spelling out the word inches, all of that stuff, we take care of that and clean it for you. So when it gets into our SQL database, it's already ready and you can trust it. So our guarantee, our look is the most trusted data source because we've cleaned it. We have 10 years of experience on that API. And so, you know, we know what we're doing to make that data visualizable.
So for somebody who's like not as techie as you are, as you and Brandon are, you guys talk about this, like, why do I, help me understand this? Cause we're all buying like 17 of the tools that are out there, mm-hmm. You know, confession moment here. Nobody listening to this doesn't have like 7 subscriptions to these. But what's different about a SQL database? Like, why do we care about that? Like, why is that different than some of the off-the-shelf tools that are out there right now?
Yeah, no, fantastic question. So the SQL database is cool because basically any visualization tool that you could possibly imagine connects to a SQL database. In fact, this website, we're using an app called StreamYard right now. There is a SQL database in the background that's running this. Like, it is the most popular version of any, like WordPress has them. Everything has a SQL database. Shopify uses them, right? What's behind the API, what's behind what you're seeing on the page is a database in some form or fashion. And SQL is by far the most popular. So if you took and said, hey, guy on Upwork that charges $15 an hour, here is access to a data dictionary that describes every piece of data you could possibly want inside my Amazon account. Here's every single one. The question I want to answer is, and you say, which product variant is selling the best across these categories with these different advertising campaigns in there? Can you build me a dashboard that shows me that? He's going to go look at the data, and in 2 or 3 hours, he's going to say, yes, I can. And it's going to cost you $200 to have that answer. And when you go back to the visualization tool, Google Looker Data Studio is one that I would look at. It's free. I like Preset even a little better. Preset's one that's got a free option as well. He will build you a dashboard that you can hit refresh on. Boop, refresh, boop, refresh. And it'll answer that question over and over and over and over again. So with that SQL database at your fingertips, all of a sudden $60 a month turns into $200 for every question I ask. And it's free to get the question answered again because you just hit the refresh button. And all you're paying for access to the data for your individual account is $60 a month. So like all of a sudden you went from, hey, I've got all this data inside my account, but my VAs have to go download it all and put it in these spreadsheets. And I don't really have a dictionary that describes everything. And can you put all of that together and like actually tell me what to answer this question? That's going to be a lot longer. He's going to take 10 hours looking at all of that data. And then he's going to come back and say, yeah, I can do this, but it's only going to work once and it's going to cost $1,000. So the SQL option puts it in a format that you will find tons of freelancers who understand SQL databases. And with a data dictionary, they can quickly go in and answer your questions for a fraction of the cost. So that's cool where it gets really exciting.
Thank you. Sorry for interrupting. But what's interesting about this is that I have found as a CFO that I either am partnering with a tool that is so boxed in that it doesn't fully answer the question that I'm looking to have answered. And I think from what I've seen in your demos of Data Hub, it gives me a little bit more flexibility to do what I want to do with the data. Answer, like I'll give you a super concrete example. At Seller Accountant, return on working capital is a really crucial KPI for us. But you can't get to that KPI anywhere within any of the tools that are off the shelf. And so what ends up happening here in our CFO practice is we end up having to build custom, Google Sheet or Excel spreadsheet analysis. Well, then I run into my second problem. Is now I've got the answer to my question, but it is dated like in 1 second. Like it's all of a sudden irrelevant. And so what I love about what I'm learning about Data Hub is that it kind of gives you the best of both worlds, where I can build my own set of queries and exactly what I want my answer to. And like you mentioned, I could refresh it every 5 minutes if I wanted to and still get real-time data that's going to be accurate.
If you said, so let's say you took that dashboard to that same person who built all those queries, and you said, hey, I've now got a guy who writes scripts, and I want this script guy to send me an email every time this happens. I want an alert. Think like AMZ alert, but your own version. Like he now can sit on top of that SQL database, and every time Seller Labs refreshes that database for you, you can then get an alert that says, uh-oh, somebody hijacked my listing, but it was in this specific way that the other guys aren't watching for because they're not running your business. They're trying to build something that works for everybody. So, and you mentioned Google Sheets and Excel. We are actually the only tool on the market that has the SQL version of everything, as well as a Google Sheets and an Excel connection that makes it so that if Tyler comes back to me and says, hey, Will, I just love my Excel spreadsheet. I don't want to put it in like a Power BI or anything like that. We can hook it up there and it'll refresh the whole dang thing for him in the same way that it would in a SQL dashboard, but he can stay in the place that he knows and loves, which is Excel. So we're the only tool that does that all the way across the board.
Well, so, and we will make sure that folks can find you. Obviously everyone knows what Seller Labs is. You guys were the the really initial movers when it comes to great software for Amazon. Guys, I just want to reiterate what Will just said there is if you're struggling, I mean, the intro to this episode was about FBA hikes for small and light products and pressure on tacos, pressure on inbound freight, pressure on cost of goods sold from our suppliers in Asia. Everything around us is squeezing us. And so CFO hat here for a second. Here, let me get it. CFO hat, here it is. It has never been more important for you and me to manage each of our ASINs on a profitability level and on a return on capital level. And if your current tech stack doesn't give you that level of visibility, I definitely just want to recommend reach out to Will and the guys at Seller Labs to learn more about their products.
That's our goal, is to help. And if you just want to understand more about the data, like, we're happy to educate you and help you understand where some of the data discrepancies we're seeing are and look at it. So it's a key part of running an Amazon business is understanding the data.
Well, let's pivot. Here's the last section of the Return on Podcast kind of feed for these interviews is, listen, dude, you're I know this because I know you're a successful guy. There are things in your life that are giving you an unfair advantage that have been have given you an unusual ROI for the amount of effort. And I'm just curious, do any habits or hacks come to mind that you're like, listener, do this, you'll get great results?
Yeah. So one of my hacks is actually while I mow my lawn, okay, I hire an extremely expensive consultant to teach me the way he thinks, like while I'm mowing my lawn. So he actually walks alongside. No, he doesn't walk alongside my mower. But what I do is I find people like Dan Martell and a book called Buy Back Your Time. And I put him into my headphones and I listen to him teach me how to be a better entrepreneur, how to do more with my time, how to multiply myself, how to literally clone my, like, he's got a formula in there for how to clone yourself. So like you, that's what I do. I while I mow the lawn, I sharpen my saw. And then I actually find myself finding other things to do in the yard, which is a win-win, right? Because my wife's like, oh, he mowed the lawn and he did the weed whacking and he went and killed all those wheat. Like, wow, this is great. And I'm thinking, this is awesome. No one bugged me for 3 hours while I listened to Dan Martell tell me all the secrets about how to be a better entrepreneur. So get a subscription to Audible or one of these other platforms and listen or read these books that are out there and ask the people you're on calls with. Like Tyler mentioned two different books. It was like $1 Million Deals was one book that he mentioned. And then the other one he mentioned is The Leader's Guide. I wrote down The Leader's Guide. Like, this is my hack. I wrote it down and I literally says Eric Ries. I love his other book. So I find thought leaders from a standpoint of authors and I go hunt those down so that I can get them again and again and again. So,
by the way, it's $100 million offers. I want to make sure I give Alex proper. Alex Hormozy is the guy. It's candidly, and Alex, if you ever listen to this, huge fan of the show, Alex is right now. But like Alex, no offense intended here, but he smells a little bit like Russell Brunson a little bit. He's got a real sales edge to him.
Nice.
Some of the ways he articulates how to build a compelling offer, I found really fascinating. And so to your point, Will, I think you're right. I mean, we can obsess over how am I going to raise a budget to hire a high dollar coach? How can I get better in my diet or in my marriage or in my business, my leadership? And guess what? For $12, somebody has already done this successfully and they're willing to teach you. That's why people write books. Don't be a fool and fail to listen to other people. And I agree with you there.
The way I find is I find somebody I admire who solves this problem. And I ask them, what book did you read that teaches this principle best?
Yep.
And if there's another one called Turn the Ship Around that I'm listening to right now. Okay. Good friend of mine, Non Dean, who I'm getting in way deeper with him. He's coming into Seller Labs as an equity partner. That man, he is my opposite in so many ways. And so when I see him do something that I'm like, well, my thinking was not on par with that, I ask him, what book did you read that taught you this framework of thinking? And like, he's told me, Will, no, you got to stop buying all these books. You got to read this one and then read this one. And like I've already got a reading list of stuff with him as he mentors me through some of this stuff.
By the way, Nan's a really good friend of mine. N-H-A-N, Nan. If you go back in about a year ago in Return on Podcast, I did an episode with him about how he took his dad's tiny lawnmower repair service business and turned into an 8-figure Amazon monster. Feel free to go back and check that out. The guy's an absolute animal. And I do recommend David Marquette's book, Turn the Ship Around. That's a really good one. But I think your point is well taken there. Ask people what they're reading. Something I heard, and I think it was like a James Clear book or something like that, but it was like, read a lot more books, quit the bad ones and reread the good ones. In other words, like, you know, like be constantly learning. And so, Will, I think that's a really great hack, dude. I just want to close by saying, man, Will Christensen, I love you, buddy. I recommend you to everyone I talk to. Any final words for the good of the group here before we close the episode?
Man, if anybody's listening to Tyler for the first time, I recommend Tyler the same way. I have never gone wrong with our relationship. And I would say there's another hack. Find people that you jive with value-wise and meet with them on a regular basis. Like you'll be amazed at what the camaraderie, the accountability, all of the above. Good stuff all around.
So true. Whether it's you and me, or I'm thinking about other guys like Nan or Yoni or any of these guys in the space that just are really great, clear thinkers. Mm-hmm. That adage that you are the average of the people you spend time with is just true, guys. I just want to think that's a good punctuation for the episode here. Will, you're the man. Thank you for joining us. We'll make sure people have links to your websites, data automation if you need to build an integration, Seller Labs if you're looking to go next level with your SKU level profitability on Amazon. And then let me just close the episode here, guys. Thank you for listening to this kind of first interview of season 2 Return on Podcast with me, Tyler. If this content serves you guys, help me out. Like it, subscribe to the channel. We need your help. We need your support. And stay tuned because we will be back next week. Take care.